The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 79, Worth Review.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another fine episode of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Mark.
And tonight, we are here to discuss, after discussing a long feedback that's about to come, Season 8, Episode 15, which is titled Worth. So, before we get to that, just to say, for those of you that were able to get your feedback in, we are recording this a day early, and I said on the Facebook group that I explain why. It's basically because I have taken on some editing for the Podcastica network, so when we would normally be recording tomorrow night, instead I will be editing a Walking Dead podcast that probably gets, oh, I don't know, 20 maybe 40 times as many downloads as we do the Walking Dead cast. So you won't hear me, but I'll be working behind the scenes on that. And I've been doing some editing for Jason on the Podcastica network in the past week or so. So last week I edited the Westworld cast and Game of Microphones. So I'm taking on the big daddy. this week. So, and I'll eventually guest host on there probably during Fear. But, Jason, thanks for the opportunity. It's much appreciated. And, speaking of which, it's a good time to announce I've hinted at what we have planned for next week. And, I think you will all agree once I tell you that's going to be awesome. So, we expect the two episodes for next week's crossover to be tied together, literally, because you see Morgan in the middle of the poster. So what we are planning to do is we have arranged joining Mark and myself and, of course, Kyle, who does the episodes with me for Fear. We are, by popular demand, planning to bring back two of my most favorite people in the whole wide world. And I will say, when they were on a few months back, led to Podcast Gold, Rima from Strange Indeed and Kristen from Game of Microphones. So again, I want to stress that's tentative. If one or both of them can't attend, we will have replacements to come on. But they're tentatively agreed for both of them, so I think it's safe that I can announce it. And depending on how much we need to cover, we may or may not cover your feedback that episode. Now, if we don't, we will cover it. What we will have to do is do a separate or multiple separate. Oh my God.
We could do a two-parter.
Yeah. A two, a three, a five-parter. anyway, depending on how long we go and all that, we will do separate feedback episodes. So please, we do plan to record Tuesday night or normal night. So get your feedback in. But if we don't cover your feedback, then just rest assured we will. So bottom line is you will be getting a lot of us in the next week. So regardless of how we format everything. Ooh, that's a mouthful even to talk about now, but I'm excited, but also scared because it's going to be a lot to do, but thankfully we have multiple editors on staff. So if I need help, Mark, you might be able to help as I know Kyle will. So
yeah, this will be fun.
Yeah. It's going to be a huge amount of fun. So, and Rima and Kristen, go back and listen to episode 70 and 71, from earlier this season, and you will hear podcast gold if you haven't heard it already. Anyway, so some feedback for last week. Season 8, episode 14, Still Gotta Mean Something. And before we get into that, we have Errata. And it was something I thought of when I was editing the episode on Friday, that I mentioned that there were some things that were discussed back from several episodes. One of them I mentioned was Nebraska, season 2, episode 8. But what I was thinking of mostly was the stand down that happened after Rick killed those two guys, which we actually saw in the next episode, which was season 2, episode 9, Trigger Finger. And because I'm kind of, I keep saying that I have a photographic memory, I thought I'd better correct my photographic error.
Hey, you have a better memory than I do.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the stand down of the things that he said, I think actually came in after that. And that was the episode that, what's his name? It was just in my head now and it escaped me.
Randall.
Thank you. See, I had a photographic assist. Anyway, that was the episode that they took Randall back. So if you don't recall. All right. So just before we started recording tonight, we got a long piece of feedback that came in from Angela. All right. So she starts off, she says, Rick is not bad and Rick is not a villain. Negan is not good and Negan is a villain. And to that, I will say, I agree. And if anything I said last week would indicate otherwise, I apologize for that. I was more reacting to the things that were in that episode, not so much those characters in general. I keep hearing people talk about how Rick has turned to the dark side, has become evil, and has gone too far to be considered the show's hero. And the most frustrating, if we had been following Negan's group from the beginning and not Rick's, it would be easy to sympathize with the saviors and Negan. And they could easily be the show's protagonists in that case. I say BS to all of it. And I know that I covered that last week. I wholeheartedly agree with that sentiment. I don't believe that is true. You just have to look at Negan's sadistic killing, how he doesn't just kill the people that he kills. He obliterates them. He turns their brains into pulp. Or he does what he did to Simon in this episode, which is, you know, he kills them and then he lets them turn and become a wall sculpture. become walkers against the wall. So yeah, Angela, I wholeheartedly agree with that sentiment. Let's continue, Mark.
It's really a simple premise. They are fighting a war. Whether or not a war is good or bad is a separate argument. If Rick's side wins the war, people will be free. If Negan's side wins, people will be slaves. How can you say a slave master, Negan, is equally qualified to be a protagonist is beyond me. Rick and his group have never sought to suppress and enslave any group of people. For the most part, when they weren't attacked first, Rick and his group have either tried to help people they encountered or ignored them. Remember, even after the first war with the governor was over, they took in the governor's people. Yeah, back at the prison.
Right.
The fact that Negan purports his system of slavery, what he euphemistically calls saving, is for their own good, is disgusting. It's reminiscent of racist things slave owners used to say about slavery being benefit for the poor primitive savages they were rescuing. It's a total fallacy, not to mention the brutality by which it's enacted by killing at least one person from each new group encountered in the name of help. Negan, with all his charm, is a psychotic slaveholder. That doesn't mean we can't enjoy watching him and even like him and even have sympathy for good parts of him, because no one is pure evil, not even comic books. But objectively, his actions would lead to the creation of a suppressive evil society. It is empirically the greatest good that be defeated.
Yeah, I would agree with pretty much everything you said here, Angela. You know, Negan, he does treat those people as slaves, and he's got like different levels of slavery. There's the slaves that are essentially living under the roof of the sanctuary, and then there are the slaves that are in the settlements that are being enslaved, you know, with 50%, which is, you know, 50% according to him, which could mean 100% or 99.9%. So calling him a slave owner, a slave holder, slave master, I think all of those terms are accurate in his case.
Actually, I think it's more indentured servants.
Okay. Yeah. Indentured servitude. Yeah. I would agree with that. The idea of owing your soul to the company store, as the old song says, you'll never work down your debt to the Negan store. So there's no way of getting out of it unless you become a bad guy yourself, like Dwight did, which I would say he did for Sherry. I think that is the only way you can really look at it. But to continue, Angela says, Rick, on the other hand, wants to rebuild the world in the more democratic image of the world as it existed prior to the zombie apocalypse. He fosters cooperation among disparate groups, not dominance or slavery of disparate groups. He's empirically the greatest good that Rick's side between the two choices win. I agree.
Yeah, makes sense. She continues, so back to what happened in the bar, where Rick gave his word that he would not kill the saviors, and then he killed the saviors who ostensibly were trying to help him. The key word is ostensibly. Yeah, it looked like they were trying to help in that moment. I just like to look at it like Rick was trying to help them. They were all under attack, and it was logical to pull them together to defeat the walkers. But that's it. After that, they are still the enemy. It's really easy for us on our cozy couches with our Doritos and tabs and to dissect what a soldier did in war. But in truth, the pressures they are facing are probably not real to the most of us. The pressures of, if I save their lives and bring them back to my home, how do I know they won't become traitors and their actions won't lead to death of Judith or the other people, all that we love? If I let them go, how do I know they won't come back in a few days with Negan and kill me and my family? I don't know about you, but I have never had to make a decision even remotely approaching that. But if I did, I have to make that decision. 8 years of watching The Walking Dead has taught me to kill the bastards, because if you let them live, you will suffer in the end, and people you love will die. It's as simple as that. I think of the bastard who freaked out in the warehouse and led to the death of Deanna's son and Noah. If they had just killed him when they were first learned what a whimpering turncoat he was, maybe Noah would still be alive. But they weren't that hardened yet, and they were trying to do the right thing and give people a second chance. all of which I agree until a point. That point is now. Those saviors in the bar were from the outpost. They are basically soldiers, not workers. This is war. Moments ago, they were threatening to kill our protagonists after escaping from the prison in which they are not being harmed.
I mostly agree with what you said, Angela, but I will bring up one point that I neglected to say last week, and I believe I mentioned it on the blog post. And it was one of those things that I had noticed it. I didn't write it down. And then when we were talking, I forgot about it. And that was that I noticed one of the saviors in that bar, when the walkers came, he said walkers. He didn't call them, you know, dead ones or deadies or however the saviors call the dead. He specifically called them walkers. And to me, that was a subtle hint that at least for that savior, he had switched sides. Okay. Now, that's pretty subtle, but it is one of those things like you, I think, and someone of like, I'm a good example of this. You know, I was born and raised in Canada, you know, okay, a mile from the border, but still. And a lot of what I say now, and even my accent has changed a lot in the 18 years that I've lived in the States. And you absorb, you know, the things that when you live in a culture, you absorb the things from that culture. And I think that at least for that one savior, he had absorbed to say that they were walkers. And to me, that was a signal that he was going to come back and be one of the good guys. So I don't know, it might be a stretch, but the bastard that she mentions, that was of course Nicholas, who led to the whole dumpster thing.
Yeah. Well, basically what you're trying to say is that they become acclimated to the surroundings in their society.
Yes.
And they adopt those acronyms and those terms for their own to be kind of taken in.
That's
which
exactly
makes sense.
Point.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like when you were, and like you were saying, you're a mile away from the border within Canada to America, but you know, you adopt those things, and honestly, you do not sound Canadian.
I do on some words, but at the same time, I think I've talked about this before. A lot of my accent got dropped when I lived in Jacksonville because it was a lot more pronounced back then, and people made fun of me or couldn't understand me. Which is weird. And that was kind of like a time when I was just like, okay, I have to sound more American. So I actually worked on my accent. And it wasn't even an unconscious thing. I was consciously trying to change my accent a little bit. So
I've done that before too.
Yeah.
I came from New York City and I came
really?
Up to you.
I well, still hear it with you.
It's still in there, but the thing is that when I started doing this, a lot of the way I speak, even when I lived in Staten Island, I don't say tree and for the number three.
Okay.
And there's a lot of things that go on within those mannerisms and how you speak.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't get that and they don't understand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I became more self-conscious of those things. And somebody had asked me, you're talking back in 1992, are you from California? I'm like, no. So, but you know, it's very different. And
yeah,
you know, it's being more self-aware. And then eventually you adopt that in some way.
Yeah.
Being up north of the city, and I'm in New York State. So now I sound a little bit more New England mixed with New York City.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. And just because you're in, you know, an area, it doesn't mean that you completely adopt it either. So one of the things that gets said around here, I brought it up this morning when I was out with, my wife shopping, it was, I think something needs fixed, and that drives me crazy. But that's said around here in the Cleveland area, all over the place. And I think also Pittsburgh, but instead of saying needs to be fixed, like somehow the to be gets removed. That drives me crazy. I won't say that. Although, although this morning I did. And as soon as I did, I was like, why did I say that?
Yeah, something needs fixed.
Exactly.
In New York it would be gotta fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. We still got more to go. Did Rick go too far? Who knows? Maybe it would have all worked out if he had let them live, but maybe it wouldn't have, as we see, I've seen many times in the past. One thing's for sure, though, none of those saviors are going to kill any of his people now. That we know for sure. At most, he made a mistake or went too far, but he has not become evil or lost his moral compass. He is still operating off of the same principles. Protect my loved ones, create a world for people where they can be free to try again, to live a normal life. Just because the circumstances have accelerated and Rick has risen to meet the circumstances doesn't mean that his basic nature had changed. Soldiers do crappy things in war all the time without losing their core goodness, and they live with regret. And that's probably what we should thank them for the most. Their willingness to live with the regret so that we don't have to. War is hell. Or hadn't you heard? Yeah, well said, Angela. I don't have too much to say about that, but I think you've summed up things quite well there. So, all right, next.
I think the problem is with the writing. Instead of taking a clear viewpoint like Rick is good or Rick is bad, they are trying to create an artificial tension with this so-called moral ambiguity of Rick's actions. Unfortunately, the universe that you have created for the last 8 years suggests that he probably did the right thing. But on the other hand, the writers are signaling that this may have been an evil thing to do. And this is signaling seems to force and be arbitrary, like the writers are desperate to create some dramatic tension that doesn't really exist. We know this is a brutal world where people die all the time. And you want to live, you have to kill. So it's a bit confusing for people because it's arbitrary to stick this moral ambiguity on top of his character. It is also not interesting because we've seen it before. # more than once.
Yeah, the show does get repetitive when it comes to the moral compass / moral ambiguity. So I would agree with that. And I don't know. They did. I think last week's episode with Negan aside, I think that the one thing that I am still thinking of is how Negan, when he was talking to Jadis, he said something like, I will help you take it back. And to me, that comes back to the idea that people are resources to be exploited. They are not people. And, I hate, maybe I'm sensitive to this because I had a recent HR incident, specifically I lost my job, where they will mention resources, people are resources. But when you do that, you obfuscate and hide the fact that people are people, and Negan does that in the most despicable, I think, ways that, people are not things to be exploited. They are, and they are not tools. They are people.
Yes, they're individuals.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you, Angela, for that insightful email. And like I said, we got it just before the wire, but I read it and I was like, we have to include this this week, especially knowing what we've got coming next week. So anyway, thank you, Angela. Nice to hear from you. And let's move on to this week. So this episode was titled Worth. That's episode 15 of season 8 of The Walking Dead, written by the, and his name was long. Now it's even longer. And I noticed this last week, his name had changed from David Leslie Johnson to David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick. So I don't know what the story is behind that. I don't know if he got married or what have you, and decided to add his partner's name. I don't know, but
it works.
Your name was long and now it's even longer. Anyway, and Corey Reed. So David is a consulting producer and he's written quite a few things this season. And he had written some things. I think he wrote at least one last season, maybe two. And he wrote Chupacabra from season two. Corey Reed, he's also written several episodes over the last several seasons. He's a co-exec producer. Directed by, and I know him best from his time on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. And he's directed at least a couple episodes of The Walking Dead. Michael Slovis. All right, so. Out of 10, what did you think of Worth?
I give it 8 out of 10 mac and cheese with sardines, Eugene vomit spews.
And I had a hard time coming up with what to call this one because I was going to say something very similar. So I'm going to say 8.5 snapped windpipes. So... is good, but I didn't like it as much as some of the other episodes this half season. So, all right, we've got some listener ratings.
Cheryl Fox says 8.75 sardine mac and cheese.
PB and Zane, Judy, she had written back to say that she had changed her rating, but I don't know to what, or at least she said that she liked it better on a second watch. But the rating that we have is 6 out of 10. And this was one of my favorite terms in an episode that yet again had a lot of penis and testicle humor. 6 out of 10 testicular heft.
Steve Brown gives it 8 out of 10 fake siege plans. Is Rick really going to buy that? I edited this rating after watching Negan and Simon fight.
Glynis Goltz says 8.5 out of 10 worthwhile. I don't know what might be worthwhile, but worthwhile something.
Worthwhile watches.
Okay.
Tilly Creary, 8 out of 10 Walker Simons. That was an unexpected treat, seeing him all Walkerfeld.
Dieta Patterson says, decent episode. I rate this episode 8 out of 10, Rosita's gun to throat. Eugene finally shuts the hell up. All right. So now it's time for Awesome Sauce. Awesome Sauce! Mark? Why don't you start it off?
Cheryl Fox says that Carl did the voiceover when Rick was reading the letter. Negan and Simon fighting to the end was awesome. But if I was Dwight, I'd be so scared. Also, I love that Negan was one step ahead of everyone. I know Negan is the bad guy, but I still like him a lot. Winning is killing every last one of you, Negan. Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of sad that both sides have gotten to that point. And I don't mean to put that in my sad sauce, but it is kind of funny that even so-called Negan wasn't going to do what Simon wanted, but in the end, that's exactly what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. You were expecting that right off the bat, and he just changes. It's kind of cat and mouse.
Mm. All right. PB and Zane says the commercials for Fear. Okay. Dwight being outed was good. Yeah, it was. And it was one of those things I kept on waiting for Laura to be exposed. And when that scene, you know, that with Negan and Dwight talking in the hallway, I knew it was coming. Then I was just waiting for it. But I kept when it got to that point, I knew that's what we were waiting for, because I knew it couldn't have been Gregory. For one thing, you know, we see Gregory talking to Simon before Simon knows that Negan's there. So it didn't make sense that it would have been Gregory that got picked up. But doggone it, that Gregory, how the heck does he get back to the sanctuary and none of those saviors get back?
Yeah, he's a lizard. He slips through the fingers. And on top of that, there was no way that could have been Gregory.
No.
Yeah, you know, Laura's just too darn pretty, you know, in my opinion.
Well, I would agree with that, but I'd also – and did you notice that her – you could hardly see her neck tattoo in this scene that – I guess was the angle, but you could hardly see that god-awful tattoo that they gave her.
Yeah, they seem to be lowering her hair a little bit, letting it out, if you ever notice, throughout every scene. It's weird. She recently did a YouTube conversation about how she got the character, too, which is really interesting from the actress.
Yeah.
So I recommend that to people. If you're a YouTube fan like I am, and I just usually just watch a lot of things, go look at that. She's very honest, very nice, and seems to be just a nice, sweet person.
Lindsley. Which I've never heard of. That's first person I've ever heard with that name before, Lindsley. So,
All right.
Lindsley Register is her name.
Let's continue.
Yeah.
Steve Brown says, Rosita and Eugene scenes, Daryl's arrow to the head of the savior.
Glynis has three. She says, first one, Rick, at least, reading Carl's letter, and Michonne reading Carl's letter to Negan. Not that'll be taken to heart yet, after both were read and revealed after a killing spree by both Negan and Rick, and further killing is planned by both sides. Her second one, cat and mouse game with Negan / Simon and Negan / Dwight. I would agree with both.
Same here.
Yeah. And last is the Eugene rescue and his escape from Daryl and Rosita. I have something to say about that in a minute.
Okay. Tilly Curry, the whole Simon Dwight takedown shows how crafty Negan can be to set them for their own demise rather than just shooting them outright, which is what I thought he would do.
Dieta has two, and first is Rosita putting the gun to Eugene's throat and threatening to blow his head off, but she's not because they needed him for what's in his head. And then second is the commercial for Walking Dead, which said in big headline, the war ends. She says, finally, the war ends, finally, with big smiley faces, hail and applause and thumbs up and hands together.
Waving hands.
Yes. Yeah. And then she says, finally, the end is here. And to that, I must say the showcase award is granted to you. And I should say Angela gets one too. I didn't give you one. But Dieta, I'll give you a short one here. to say I agree wholeheartedly. I am very glad to see that they left no uncertain terms in the promoting of the next episode to say that the war ends here. So I can't wait for it to finally be done. All right. Our awesome sauce. Mark, you've got a couple.
Yeah, I got a few. Finally seeing who turned Whitey Boy into Negan. Thank God. And I had seen this coming a long way, and I knew it had to be Laura, because she got away in some way at that one night scene. It was a cat and mouse for Negan, but the scene was nice to see. Laura just being there, calling out Dwight alongside Negan in that hallway. You know, he brings him in. She's sitting there, all happy and comfortable. Then there's the Mortal Kombat fight with Negan and Simon. That was completely awesome. I was hearing that whole Mortal Kombat theme coming through as they were fighting. Secondly, Michonne reading out Carl's letter to Negan. You know, seeing Negan's face as she reads it over the walkie-talkie was really deep. Even though that Negan just tries to turn it around, I really think there is something deep down inside of Negan that is good. As he is the true bad and he is the big bad, he's still human. He still feels, even though he has a twisted idea of what he's doing. He really can't be the Grinch all the time, in my opinion.
You're a mean man, Mr. Grinch. Most of what I had for awesome had already been stated, but there is one thing that I thought was awesome in that we had suspected this, and I was glad to hear it revealed this episode, that Simon was the one that killed the Oceanside men and boys. And after seeing what he did to the trash people, that was something that I had thought, and I was glad to see that it had finally been revealed that that was the case. So, yeah, I had other things that I thought were awesome, but they were already talked about. Like, I did really enjoy the letter, Carl's letter to Rick. I thought that was good. And I did enjoy Michonne reading it to Negan, and I was glad that she didn't deliver it directly to Negan. I thought that would have been the stupid act, but the way that she did it, I thought was good.
Well, he flat out told her, it's like, oh, I'd hate to kill the delivery person of that letter.
Yeah. All right, it's time for Weak Sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
All right.
PB Insane says, Gregory is still alive.
Unfortunately, I think we have to use that one in perpetuity. He is very slippery, like you said. Cheryl Fox says, Michonne's reading Carl's letter to Negan. It really was pointless. See, it's funny how, you know, some people can look at it one way and other people can look at it the exact opposite. Gregory telling Simon, I make things happen. Is he kidding? No, I think he's just got an inflated ego. All he does is go from one place to another trying to save himself. Someone needs to put him out of his misery. I would agree. I was surprised he did what Dwight said. Also, the way they showed, yeah, actually, that's worth saying. Yeah, I was slightly surprised. Like, you would think that Gregory would just, you know, take off. But since he, you know, can't kill, he's got to go where he could be protected. So I think it did make sense for him to go back to the hilltop because, I mean, where else is he going to go, right?
Yeah, well, he's pretty much the Eugene of the hilltop.
Yeah, but I was surprised because, you know, he's about as reliable as something that isn't reliable that I can't think of right now. Had a long day today.
A flathead screwdriver with a Phillips head.
There you go. Also, the way they showed the Oceansiders versus Aaron, it was not a great sequence of scenes, but it makes me think they are going to come in and save the day next week. Yeah, I would agree with that assessment, Cheryl. I thought that the Oceanside scenes this whole season have been weak, and this was not any different. It was, I thought, weak as well.
Steve Brown says, Daryl said they must have heard us pull up about the walkers they encountered. They were walking the Aaron scenes.
Glynis, she has a couple. She says, please give Daryl something more to say instead of all gruffness and growling. Yeah. His character hasn't been well treated this particular season. He has, even when he has more to say, you know, it hasn't been the best character moments. Like, I heard another podcast say that it seems like, you know, Daryl used to be the number two on this series, and it seems like Negan's the number two character, not Norman Reedus. It seems like Jeffrey Dean Morgan seems to be the number two character. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, in a sense that they've been narrowing down his dialogue over the past three seasons.
Yeah.
He hasn't really been saying much. When was the last time we actually saw him have a full conversation? I think the last time we actually saw him have a full conversation was with Beth during that one episode that you hate when they were drinking the moonshine and they, what was it? The funeral home. And
yeah. I wouldn't say that I hate that episode. I hate the premise of the episode. I like the character moments, but the fact that they were doing all this just so Beth could have her first drink, I thought was kind of dumb. So I think that kind of tarnished my thoughts of the episode, but I did like the character moments. Mostly Daryl's lines in this season, like he's had a few the previous episodes, but they've been more reaction to stuff like, like him, you know, blowing up because they let Dwight go and, you know, stuff like that. He doesn't have inside character moments. You know, he's reacting to stuff.
Yeah, it's more reaction, no depth into what he's saying.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Her second weak sauce is Aaron and Oceanside. Just done with that storyline. Would Aaron really be in such dire straits when he's been out on the road recruiting before? So he's no rookie, just to make the fights with the various walkers suspenseful. It seems the writers also cannot make up their minds when it comes to Oceanside direction, having Tara, Enid, and now Aaron have communications with them. That's a good point, or points. I would agree with everything you said. And yeah, it seemed like Tara was the person to communicate with Oceanside. And then it became, you know, Enid and Aaron, and now it's just Aaron. So it does seem kind of forced. And it also seems like if they'd written the story a different way, and this is one of those things that I've you know, been harping on this season about the characters acting in character to produce the story, it seems like Tara should have been the one to go to Oceanside here and not Aaron, but they did that because they needed Tara and Dwight to have that interaction, you know? So it seems, again, it's one of those things, but then Aaron has had the recruiter thing. So, you know, Glynis makes a great point here that he would have this kind of like close to death experience. He should know how to be out there and to survive on his own and not be so close to death.
Yeah.
So that's a great point. Anyway, let's move on.
Deetta Patterson, Eugene monologues, and him getting away from Daryl and Rosita, which was very unique and very creative, but very disgusting.
Yes, doubly so, which we'll get into in a second. Tilly, she says, along the same lines, the whole kidnapping of Eugene, we get it. He's angry and feeling disenfranchised by Rick's group. And I would say to that, I think that's a valid feeling, because it's really only since he's been under Negan that he's really been utilized well. You know, he's actually been given stuff to do that he can do, and he's been respected. But when he was with Rick, he was really not respected very, very much, and, you know, had a minor role. And now he's on the other side playing a major role. That doesn't mean I like him, but I'll get to that in a second. Sure, they could use his knowledge, but do they honestly think he's going to give them his best advice from a prison cell? Yes, he'll do anything to stay alive, but honestly, he's too unreliable to trust. They're going to regret not killing him come next episode. Now he's even angrier and more intent on providing the means to kill Rick's group. And I would say wholeheartedly, I agree with that. And as I said, if he dies next episode, I hate to say it, but I would be happy. He's gotten to the point, I think, where he's gone past the point of no return here. And I just did not enjoy this turn that he's had. And I think it got to the point here where he's just not my favorite, and I would like to see him die. All right. Our weak sauce, you got something?
Yeah. My weak sauce starts with Mr. Negan himself. Playing the game of knowing something and not knowing something, the way he goes about Dwight and what he knows, it seems a little lame. Giving Dwight high regards and then coming back after killing Simon and then enslaving Dwight. It's a cat and mouse game, like somebody else was saying before and what we were reading. And it's like, what is Negan up to? He just seeing people as resources and him playing mind games? Is that all he's about? Because honestly, that fight wasn't really that great. It didn't really show him much as a sparring partner at all. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it started good, started interesting, and then kind of ended on a whimper. Simon didn't seem to be able to, you know, put any kind of fight in once he was on the ground. And I agree to an extent, but I did like that game because I think we got a hint from last week that Negan was going to be playing a game. And I think that Dwight, in order to do what he, you know, was going to do, he had to play Dwight against Simon. And, you know, I thought that part of the episode was really effective. And I thought that Negan really played things well. I mean, to the point that he even, you know, came up with this false plan. And he knew that somehow Dwight was going to send that to Rick. So I thought that was well played. I think getting Gregory to do it was surprising. I don't think that Negan saw that coming, but I thought that the way he played it for Negan, well, it was well played. So I disagree with that part of your weak sauce. But here's my weak sauce. And I had a similar kind of problem with last week's episode. And that was, just to recall, when Negan was somehow, in the span of seconds, able to get over to the suitcase, open it up, get the guns, the flare, and the pictures out, and, you know, get them displayed, get the flare off, point the gun, all in the span of seconds. to me, that was completely unrealistic. And this episode had a very similar thing, and that was Eugene getting a little ahead of Rosita and Daryl, and then somehow hiding himself under the ashes. I don't know if he was under like a bag or something, but I thought that that was just completely unrealistic given the amount of time that passed there. It was, he wouldn't have had enough time to completely camouflage himself. I didn't buy that at all.
Interesting.
Hmm. We have some sad sauce.
Aww.
All right.
Cheryl Fox. Samwon was a great character. I'll miss him.
I would agree with that. He was a great character. And, you know, I was hoping maybe his demise would happen in the finale. But then again, I guess it made sense. Much like Merle's demise happened in the penultimate. And same with Shane's demise happened in the penultimate episodes, those seasons. I guess having Simon die in the second to last episode made sense. But I thought he was going to last that one more episode. Well, Dieta has something that we've categorized as a sad sauce, but she put it under gross sauce. I don't have a sound effect for that one. But I wholeheartedly agree. Eugene's mac and cheese with sardines, then making himself throw up on Rosita and several green and surgical mask emojis. Yeah. My wife, she has a thing about seeing people throw up, and the double whammy. She also has a thing hearing the zombies making their gurgling noises. So she doesn't watch with me, but if she had, I thought of her because she would have just completely grossed herself out. All right. Well, we have two what sauces.
What?
It's funny, you know, originally originally when Ruthie and I started that, we only had awesome sauce. And then we occasionally had weak sauce, and now weak sauce is an every week thing. And now it seems like sad and what are also becoming a weekly thing. You know, it's like how many sauces? We're like a hot sauce company. How many hot sauces can we come up with?
Well, I have a ton of hot sauces, so it's okay.
My favorite one, at least in terms of name, is one that I used to get when I was down in Jacksonville and still being sold. It's from a place called Tijuana Flats, and it's called Smack My Ass and Call Me Sally.
I've seen it.
Yep. It's a good, it's really good, actually. All right. What sauce? Cheryl had a what sauce. She says it was Laura, the tattoo lady that Negan picked up. They made us believe it was Gregory, but it wasn't. Most of us called it. Yeah, we certainly called it. Although a lot of other podcasts didn't. They thought it was going to be Gregory. But I think, at least with Mark and I, we were pretty much 100% thinking it was going to be Laura. That was really the only true possibility there.
All right. Well, it would be my what sauce. And I say what sauce? I'd say more Eugene puke sauce.
We're not going to have that every week. Nope.
I'm sorry, but that was just downright whacked out. That's how Eugene escapes Daryl and Rosita, and then he hides under a plaster wrap. Yeah, if you watch the scene, I've seen this episode at least a good 3 to 4 times. You see the plastic wrap rise up from him when he comes out underneath the ashes. I'm sorry. I had to call you guys out on the effects department, but I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Josh McDermott, but yeah, you saw it. But under that ash, I know that Eugene wanted to spray some of what he had on Rosita, but come on, that's crazy.
Oh, dude, you went there. That's just too far. All right. Well, we have feedback. It's time for Simon. I don't know if we played Simon earlier. I don't think we did, but here we have Simon, the late Simon.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right. Cheryl, she says, I liked that Rosita and Daryl kidnapped Eugene. When Rosita told Eugene that he will live, that they are just using him for his brain seemed to make him mad. I think Negan made him feel his worth. Ah, I guess that's where the title came from. Did he use that title, that term? He must have.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess that's where the title came from, was Goofy Eugene.
Well, there's always a word in or phrase that they use that's regarding the episode within the episode, mm-hmm. it seems. So that's in there.
Mm-hmm.
PB and Zane, Judy, says, a big ew for the sardine macaroni and powdered cheese. 40 minutes into this episode, and I'm not really excited about it. I hope it picks up because I really have nothing to say other than it's just a way to under par for the penultimate episode.
That's penultimate, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. And she did say later that she liked it better on second watch. All right. Kyle, he says, and we'll hear Kyle next week, the Carl message at the beginning, telling Rick to find a way to live, to Carl's message to Negan to find a way, and Michonne talking to Negan with Carl's message and Negan going F that and smashing the radio, was probably one of my favorite scenes of this season. The tension was very real and believable. I want to give more feedback. Well, you can give that next week, Kyle. anyway, so if you have anything extra, you'll be able to talk about it tomorrow, next week. So,
Steve Brown says, Simon's attempt at taking over the worst kept secret in the sanctuary. When Negan said that Simon killed a bunch of men and boys, was that to mean that the Oceansiders had the sanctuary originally?
That's a guy. Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like they were at least there. I don't know. You might have a point, Steve. Hadn't thought of it that way, but
same thing.
Yeah, I think that's actually really good insight there. Because we know that Simon killed them and that they were forced to flee. So the fact that they took over Sanctuary makes sense. Now, what about the other people? Like people that we think of, like, thank you, Negan. Thank God for you. Were they ones that didn't leave, or were they just people that came later? I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe this is something that will come up later on, or maybe next season.
Yeah, I don't know. I do agree with several people, and I mentioned it earlier, that I haven't thought that the Oceansiders storyline has been that good this particular season. So whether or not that needs to be fleshed out more, I don't know. What I would like to see between those two is I would like to see more interactions between Cindy and Tara, which they seem to have dropped that storyline from last season, and I would like to see that again. So, because maybe those two could be a couple. I don't know. All right, we've got one more bit of feedback, and that's from Dieta. She says, now that Simon has met his demise, although I wish it would have been Maggie who ended him instead, Negan did it justice. Eugene is next on my kill list. Rosita should have killed him. No bullets for nobody. But instead, he escapes and goes back to helping Negan again. Boo. I really thought they killed the old girl who was with Dwight when they ambushed Alexandria, because it was really stupid as hell for him to go back to the Saviors. Knowing she was still out there alive, didn't he think it was a chance she would make her way back and tell Negan everything? I'll stop there and say, yeah, in fact, I think Dwight was surprised when he, you know, came across those Saviors and they, you know, hadn't heard from Laura. You know, I should say Laura, not Lara. Laura's our friend that gives feedback, not Laura. Anyway, but yeah, I think that he was surprised that Laura didn't get back. So I don't think he had a chance, really. He didn't go back there on his own. He went back because it was to save our people, right?
Well, he had to.
Right.
He was forced in that position because he was trying to protect Daryl, Tara, and everybody else, even though Tara tried to kill him. So he had to do that. And then obviously he didn't think that Laura survived that night.
So. Yeah. But when it comes to going back in that circumstance, he was supposed to. You know, I had to say that at some point, even though Morgan was in this episode. I don't think, anyway, I don't remember seeing him. If he was, it was just in the background. Continuing, didn't he think it was a chance she would make her way back and tell Negan everything? I'm sure that he did. Poor Dwight, you risked it all. And then that's a grumpy emoji. I wonder if he will make it out alive. I was just starting to like him. Gregory is comical. He doesn't know what side he wants to be on. He just wants to be on the living side. That's what I'll say. Gabriel should take his mask off and start coughing and snotting and leaving germs everywhere, making everyone sick in the bullet factory, especially since his attempt to sabotage the bullets didn't work. And then a couple of smiley faces. So Aaron's just going to hang out in the Oceanside woods on a hunger strike, huh? How's that going to convince them? I thought he was going to try to talk to them. They just stepped over him like he was a dead walker. Maybe his hunger strike will intrigue them to help in the war. With some more smiley faces. Overall, decent episode. And hopefully Rick doesn't fall for this fake Savior's plan and comes up with a counter plan to upstage Negan and those damn Saviors. Again, in my opinion, they should all die a horrible death. And what would you call those emojis there? Raising your hands up? Anyway.
I don't know. They look like demon emojis.
Oh, do they? All right. Additional discussion points. Normally, you know, I will watch episodes multiple times, 4, 5, 6, 20 times before podcasting, but partially because we did this on a Monday night and partially because I was really busy all day. And last night, too, I only got to watch this one twice. So my additional discussion points are wanting. What about you, Mark? Do you have anything else you wanted to bring up?
Well, you know, basically the writing was geared more towards the character front. Think about it with Negan and with Michonne talking to Negan. Definitely with Negan's interactions within the Savior compound and how he had to deal with Dwight. So I think this whole episode was revolved around pushing the story forward just within characters. The only person that we have not seen throughout this episode was Rick. That was a crucial character that it was not put into the actual episode that we could actually look at and say, all right, this is where it's going. All we have is what was left last off on the last episode previous to this. Mm-hmm. So all we know is what's going to happen come the next episode, which is the last episode. So all we know is what Rick left off at, what Maggie left off at, how Daryl feels, because obviously we have not seen anything what Daryl feels regarding this, or even Carol. So everything was revolving around Michonne, Negan, Dwight, Simon, and pretty much all the other smaller characters. So now we're going to just jump right into this new episode, all kind of just jumbling in. So I'm curious, I have a funny feeling what this is going to be, over an hour, probably an hour and a half's worth of an episode coming up. So there's going to be a lot going on. So there's a lot that we have to look at on this episode, the previous episode, and the episode before that. I would say definitely from the time that Carl had passed all the way up until now. So there's a lot of information that's going to just come out come next episode that's going to just blow this war out crazy.
Okay. Just so you know, the next episode is an hour and 10 minutes. And then that is followed by the Fear episode, which is an hour and 7 minutes. Talking Dead starts at 11:17. So, that's worth mentioning. So
is it that because they're doing this in the cinemas as well, do you think?
Well, I think it's largely because they're doing a double episode. I don't think they can do an hour and a half this season because of that. So what they probably did is they might have moved some of the things that they were originally going to do this finale and moved them up a little bit. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if originally they were planning to have, and I will take exception to something you said. We did see Rick in this episode in the cold open, and we also saw him at the end, right? Although, yeah, you know, Rick didn't have much to say, but we do see him reading the letter to Carl. And so I think that was pretty important. So maybe, I don't know, but perhaps that scene and maybe the scene when Gregory comes back, maybe those things were originally going to be part of the finale and got moved up. I don't know. But yeah, that's what we know.
Yeah, well, all of you out there that I hope – got your Fathom event tickets for AMC and go to see it. I know for one, at my local AMC theater, they're starting at 8:30 p.m. So I do not know when that actually physically starts. I don't know if they're doing giveaways. All I did was buy my ticket. But it seems a bit early, a tad bit early, and considering that the show starts at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it odd. There might be something that they queue up before that we are not going to see on TV. I do not know.
It's highly possible. I don't know. And, you know, I know you're going, and I don't know who of is going to be on next week is also doing that. At this point, I still don't know if I'm going to be going. I like I said last week, I think I'll probably make a decision, you know, on Sunday, or for that matter, the day before, figure out if I'm going to go or not. But because I got applications all over the United States and even Canada. I think I might have one application in Canada too. So
that's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I could stay in the Cleveland area, or I could end up all East Coast or West Coast. We'll see. I don't think it's going to happen that quick, though. So, but all right, let's go into news. We don't have a lot, but we do have a little bit of news.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
The one question that I have to you, and it is part of next week, is I wonder, will the theaters have Talking Dead? Or do you think
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I don't know. They listed it as 3 hours total on mine when I looked at it. And I actually spoke to somebody on Friday when I went to go see A Quiet Place. And the girl at the counter said, she goes, no, they say no longer than 3 hours. Huh. I'm like, okay. That gave me an answer. That was a straight cut answer. So I was happy about that.
And if anyone knows what the answer is to this, and you hear this, let us know. Either send us some feedback on the Facebook group, or send us something in the feedback form at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And, you know, we'll include whatever that is, whatever information on that. That there is, and love to hear from those of you that go, and you know, we'll hear about your reactions to it, what it was like, and all that. So it should be pretty cool. Again, I'm going to try to go, but I don't know for sure if I will. Mark is going, and I think Rima is going. I don't know about Kyle. I think he might be going. Kristen, not sure about. So anyway,
there's a lot of us.
Yeah, like I say, you know, when we recorded that two-parter last half season with Rima and Kristen, the Raw was almost 3 hours, and this is covering two episodes, and there's two extra people on. I think it's going to go very long, but it'll be wonderful. So
we'll have fun with it.
It's going to be amazing. I'm hoping that everything goes perfectly with sound and everything like that. And I'll just, if it does and it sounds good, I'm going to release the stuff as quickly as possible with minimal editing, just so it's out there, but I won't make any promises. Anyway, so the news that we do have, has to do with, I mentioned Talking Dead, for next weekend's Talking Dead, they are going to have people from both shows. And I know that they mentioned Andrew Lincoln, Lenny James, I believe Garrett Dillahunt. Do you remember who else is on? Is Kim Dickens on?
No.
No?
Definitely Robert Kirkman, I think.
Yeah, Robert Kirkman and Scott M. Gimple are both on. So, and I don't know, I did not hear the two new showrunners.
Angela Kang?
No. Of Fear I'm talking about.
No.
I think it's Andrew Chambliss and something Goldberg. I have to look it up. I don't think they're on, but they may be on, you know, another episode or something. But some of the NDAs have lifted, and there's some like spoiler free reviews that have come out saying that the first two episodes are amazing. So we're going to see episode one next week, and I am really looking forward to it. And supposedly you don't have to be caught up. That's what they're telling us. You don't have to be caught up on Fear to watch season four, but
yeah,
we would both agree that season three is amazing. So we know season two was a little rough, and season one has its warts. But if you can get to the end of season two, those last two episodes are really good. And then it just goes on to season three, and season three is great. Amazing TV. So you'll be rewarded if you do. But if you don't, maybe you'll see next week and you'll go back and watch them. But anyway, I know they're on Hulu. The other thing I was going to mention, and it has to do with the crossover again, there was an article where Lenny James was interviewed on Digital Spy. And it was, he was telling the story about his crossover, and it was his decision to leave The Walking Dead to go to Fear. And apparently, you know, Scott M. Gimple came over, talked to him about it. He let it settle for a while, talked it over with his wife, and they finally decided to go for it. And I don't know. Judging on trailer and everything I'm hearing, seems like it was the right thing to do. And I wonder if they hadn't gone with him, who would they have brought over? Any ideas? Carol, maybe?
Carol, Tara.
I don't think they would have brought Daryl over.
No. They can't lose that cash cow.
No. But, I mean, if it wasn't going to be Morgan, I think the season would have been way different. So, anyway. So, that article is linked on the Facebook group. So, give it a read. It's an interesting read. All right. I think that's – oh, well, one final thing I will say. We don't have ratings for this week yet because we're coming to you on – we're recording this on a Monday night. We do have Live Plus 3 for last week, and I'll just say that because, of course, ratings last week were at the lowest it'd been in, like, since season one. But I was happy to see that in the Live Plus 3, of course, it's worth saying that that was on Easter, so ratings were probably down because of that. But in the Live Plus 3, in the 18 to 49, they were up 57% and 48% up in total viewers. So it, after 3 days, was the top rated cable program of the week. So it's good news. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the fact that ratings are down, but ratings are down across the board on everything except for maybe Roseanne. Because that show, the first, they did a two-parter the first week and the third episode last week, and it's really doing well in the ratings. So easily number one. So it's good to see. And it's actually been really good too. I know you watched it, Mark. So
yes.
Yeah. All right. That's it. So to submit your feedback, go to many different ways. First is to go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. That's how we got the feedback from Angela that we read at the start of the episode. There you can submit text or audio. There's also a link to the SpeakPipe widget. You can also call 304-837-2278. That is the Golden Spiral Media Network voicemail. Just please mention the Walking Dead talk through. Or Fear the Walking Dead talk through when you call. Most people, though, I'd say the vast majority, give us feedback through the Facebook group. And that's at facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. We occasionally get feedback on our email, which is walkingdeadgsm@gmail.com. Next week, we will go back to our Tuesday deadline, at least as far as I know. subject to availability. I mean, we may find out that we can only do it Monday night, but I'm hoping it's going to be Tuesday night. Because the reverse of what's happening this week will happen next week. So I'll be editing Walking Dead cast Monday night and hopefully doing this podcast Tuesday night. So, anyway, so assuming we go under that, the normal deadline is Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. As I mentioned at the start, it is very possible, I won't say likely, but possible that we won't cover your feedback in the next episode because of so much to cover. We may just go with the five of us and our thoughts. However, we will do an episode or two. We will cover your feedback in an episode next week, just whether or not it's the next one. So it's going to be a mess, but it's going to be an amazing mess.
It'll be a fun mess.
Hopefully it won't be a hot mess.
No. Honestly, what we should do would be give our thoughts and that nice, lovely four-way round table, and then have everybody else's comments and their feelings.
Yeah. And if we end up doing it in two segments, then we'll include feedback from the podcast. But I don't know if that's what we're going to do yet. So, you know, a lot of it will have to do with how much the two stories fit together. And, there's so many things in flux. We don't have all the answers, but we do know that we're going to do a roundtable. So, and it's going to be amazing. You will love it. And I'm declaring that you will love it. I sound like Steve Jobs. Anyway, so Twitter, Walking Dead GSM is another way to reach us. To support us, to support the podcast, the best way to do so is to leave a rating and a review. Mostly that would be in Apple Podcasts or iTunes. You can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple, which will take you to a link that has all of the Golden Spiral Media podcasts. And I know we have some new ones coming up soon. Beyond Westworld will be coming back. And there's several that are going on right now. Remaking Histories back with Timeless. And there's several going on in the network right now. Many of the genre TV stuff. If you don't listen, you should give a listen. Just look at goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple for all the different podcasts in the network. Other ways to support the network is to go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support to support me going through my jobless thing. And, you know, I don't have any news about a job yet, but, you know, I'm doing little things here and there. And I've got an interview tomorrow, and I've had some other things last week. So, you know, hopefully something will come of those. But I still don't have a word on unemployment yet. So to help my wife and I cover some expenses, I'm asking you to go to GoFundMe.com/TWDTTBrianHardDrive. And that now stands for Brian Needs More Than a Hard Drive. Because originally, that's what I used it for. But I figured just for simplicity's sake, I would keep the original campaign, just repurpose it. I want to give a big thanks to a couple of donations that we got today. Avelino and Leanne made some donations on Monday, today. So thank you so much for those. We really appreciate it. My wife does as well. All right. To wrap things up, where can our listeners hear us? Mark?
You could hear me on Panels to Pixels. We could be found on Stitcher and on Apple iTunes.
And I keep promising this. I thought we'd have it out, but I don't have it done yet. We have a roundtable coming up for the Star Trek Discovery podcast due to some things that are coming up the rest of the week. I probably won't have it out until later in the week this week, but it is an amazing episode. You will love it if you're, you know, listening to that podcast. And I know there are several listeners that listen to both. Steve, who is Mark's co-host on Panels to Pixels, is one of the people on the roundtable. He did a great job, by the way. Anyway, StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast.com, you can find us, or you can just simply go to GoldenSpiralMedia.com and find the Star Trek Discovery podcast there. The next episodes, plural, for TWD, Season 8, Episode 16, is titled Wrath, which I mentioned last week. This is the first episode that has exactly the same title in a previous episode of Fear. Season 2, episode 14 was also titled Wrath. We don't know who's written or directed it, but the description is the communities join forces in the last stand against the saviors as all-out war unfolds. Well, hasn't it been unfolding all this time? It's a strange thing to say in the description. And we will also be covering, as I mentioned, season 4, episode 1 of Fear the Walking Dead, which is titled What's Your Story? Much like the Walking Dead, we don't know who's written or directed it. We do know the description is a lone traveler's wearying journey is interrupted by new acquaintances. Some who become friend, others who become foe.
It's a trap!
Yeah.
Morgan's a trap.
Well, I was thinking the others who become foe are a trap, but... All right, so until next time, I'm Brian.
And I am Mark.
And this is The Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Night.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.